Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are in the month of Aries. Happy birthday.
Hey,
happy
thanks.
Belated birthday.
Thank you.
Ms. Amira B. What'd you do?
I survived. Like, no, I hung out. I had a great birthday. It was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're good to see you partying back with us again. On the show, we are also celebrating another 5-star review we received. Ooh. On the Facebook page.
Okay.
So we received a view from John McLaughlin.
Thanks, John.
It was a really good review. It was.
It was very well thought out. Very thoughtful.
Yes. I think everyone should go and read that and then write their
own.
Because we appreciate that. It makes us smile. It makes us keep going. Helps us know that somebody's out there listening. Mm-hmm. And
it helps us get better, you guys.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And John gave some really good feedback. So I want to thank him for that. If you can't leave a review and you just have too much money on your hands, check us out on Patreon. You can donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/faithuncut. Or you can go to the website, faithuncut.com, and donate there. We would appreciate that. You know,
we're
in here studying, reading books and stuff, and trying to bring you the best content that can be brought in this area of faith and podcasts. This is a niche podcast, so we know, you know, we appreciate each and every one of you, whether you donate or review or just listen and share.
Yes.
Thank you. Congratulations to our friends over at unfitchristian.com. D. Danielle Thomas is celebrating her third year in.
Excellent.
Call it ministry.
It's
service.
Most
She's a
definitely.
Pastor over there of a
Most
of
definitely.
A congregation of over 2,700. And she's been doing this work, hard work, for 3 years. And we just wanted to say thank you and congratulations. Keep going, because we need it. And then, is there anything else that we need to cover before we get in here?
Pay y'all taxes.
Yes. Oh, yo, I got hurt. I got hurt. I paid my taxes today. Well, I got my taxes done finally. I was putting it off
because
I knew it was going to be rough.
Yeah.
He said, I ended up owing like $4,000 on the federal side. And I'm usually getting back money, like thousands. I'm getting
people
back thousands.
People are realizing, even though this is not the topic of the show, but people are realizing that the little quirks made to the tax code in time for this round are changing those refunds into owing. And it's the rank and file. It's not people who have $4,000 laying around
to
pay.
Right, so, I mean, for decades, I've been getting a refund.
Yeah.
But the IRS is about to get a lesson and find me. You're not going to be able to find me for this. You'll get it when I get it.
No, boo, whatever that is.
So, we missed a week last week.
Yes.
Apologize for that. That was my fault. Because I had a midterm exam. I had to study. We had a show scheduled, and then I was like, you know what? I really got to pass this test.
Priorities.
Because I had always known that I just test terribly, and so I really needed to study. And turns out that it's not that I test terribly; it's that I study for test terribly. And so when I actually studied for this time, it was real easy. Like I went in there and knocked it out. It's like, man, I've been doing a bad job studying this entire time. Y'all could have had some better grades.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad things went well on your midterm.
Yeah, so we back, and I'm here to talk about echo theology.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the reason why is because this is the month of Earth Day.
Yeah.
So Earth Day is coming up April 22nd.
Yes.
And tell us about Earth Day.
Okay, so Earth Day was established in 1970, in spring 1970. A senator named Gaylord Nelson, that's a hell of a name, created Earth Day as a way to force issues regarding the environment, clean water, and clean air onto the national agenda. I think it was being handled at a state level, and there was just a lot of policies and a lot of laws that were not protecting our environment, not protecting our waterways, our neighborhoods, clean air, factories, all this stuff. So he proposed creating Earth Day in spring 1970. And on that day, which was ended up being April 22nd, 20 million Americans demonstrated in different U.S. cities to show their support for such a move. And it worked. It began that national, or it furthered that national conversation. Obviously, it didn't begin it. But him ordering it and people supporting it culminated in Congress creating the Environmental Protection Agency that December. So that's pretty fast when you think about congressional movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like we ain't had a budget since whenever, but
to have an event like that that actually creates a federal agency is a huge deal.
Exactly.
And Earth Day was big. I mean, I wasn't paying attention in the 70s because I was barely there. But in the 90s, it had this big boom where you go from 20 million in the 70s up to 200 million people celebrating this thing. And then multiple countries and everyone's getting on board.
Yep.
And so in the 90s, I remember like Field Day and I mean like Earth Day, yeah, we'd be outside with the big ball and it was like the big global.
Enjoying ourselves outside.
Yeah, kites and all that stuff. It was nice. So we wanted to talk in honor of Earth Day about ecotheology. Ecotheology is a constructive form of theology. Some say it is in a liberation vein. And basically it's a theology of living in peace with the planet Earth.
Right.
The reason why this is required, especially in Christian circles, is because Christianity has had this idea. It's not just a Christian idea. It's a Western idea of having dominion over the Earth.
Yep.
Now, if you read your Bibles in Genesis, the first chapter, you get this idea. You can get this idea that we were supposed to, humans were supposed to dominate the Earth and rule over the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we see where that's getting us. So eco-theologians are coming to the front and saying, wait a minute, I think we may have gotten that piece wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because I can see the effects on the environment, but also just from a theological perspective, there's a better way to look at this.
Yep.
So I'm going to talk a little bit later about, this is the theology episode, but I think it's important because it kind of serves as a counter narrative to some of the Christian ideas, particularly that it doesn't really matter what happens on the earth because God is just going to come back and reset it anyway and fix it all.
Right. So, or we're going to heaven and it'll be better there or whatever.
Or it has to deteriorate to a point anyway. So why bother changing it?
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get a lot of this end times view about a literal view of Revelation and why that's harmful because of the apathy that it generates. So when Jesus is in his ministry on earth, Jesus is in an agrarian society, and that's the reason why you have so many parables about agriculture, because that's the language that people understood. Shortly after this, the Gnostics come into play, and they have this idea that matter is bad or matter is evil, and it serves as a prison for the energy of the universe. That butts up against this other emerging idea from this group of Neoplatonists, where they're basically saying that creation is a beautiful thing, but there is an order to it.
Okay.
And that order is you have a lower form and then humans sit at the higher end of that hierarchy. The reason why that's important is because that Neoplatonist idea carries over for millennia, actually. That's why I say it's not just a Christian idea. It's in this case, it's a Western idea. Yeah.
Civilization.
That humans are at the top of every chain in the environment. And we are to subdue it. Shortly after that, the reform starts, and then you get this monasticism where you have these religious orders, and there becomes an order to everything.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why that's important is because you have people starting to live with the environment, but it's as a means of improving your heavenly stock or your heavenly investment.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you want, there's all this guilt. This puritanical guilt coming from the churches. And in order to be a better Christian, you would have to live better.
Yeah,
and
that's more better humble, with the earth
to bank that currency for when you get there. So, yeah, that's the monasticism leading into the reforms. And so that right standing with God is an important point that they want to make. And it's a personal deal at that point. It's an accountability system. It's a counting system for your sins so that you can reduce that ledger and be right in the end.
Appear right.
Okay, then the Enlightenment period comes and there becomes this disenchantment period where scientists like Francis Bacon have this idea that humans rule.
Period.
Like there's nothing above us. Because in the Enlightenment, things begin to move away from religion.
Mm-hmm.
So now God is not at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, science is at the top, but humans actually create and influence the science. So and humans are actually at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the rulers of the universe. Then we move to the Industrial Revolution, where we're actually taking care of the earth.
Are we?
In a horrible way.
Okay, because like, that's not how I remember the right. Industrial
Revolution. So we're actually bringing the earth into submission.
Yeah.
And using its resources, i.e. gas, fossil fuels, things like that.
We're harnessing energy to widen our imprint. I mean, let's just put this off on a tangent. The Industrial Revolution, because of the harnessing of energy that allows for the establishment of industry, so large-scale industry, you're moving from cottage products and let's say more handmade or more large-scale processing of natural resources. So what's important to understand here is that natural resources being harnessed by more efficient systems of energy are producing more products for consumption. They're moving people around at a speed that they've never moved around. It's spawning new development and the establishment of new societies. All of this is happening within the same, let's say, 200-year period of the founding of different colonies that become countries in the New World. Mm-hmm. And then the system of this emerging system of capitalism started with mercantilism, but this emerging system of capitalism is coming. And we've talked about this before. Capitalism pretty much butted up against and ultimately either corrupted or was corrupted by the presence of this Western theology around Christianity. So these ideas emerge together, like right here, Manifest Destiny.
Okay, yeah. So that's right before this period of industrialization.
Right. So Manifest Destiny is people saying, not only do we have dominion, but we have the right to move as far and as wide as we want to and exercise dominion over anything we encounter. Without those ideas, you don't have, let's say, the widespread subjugation of indigenous cultures. So you have people tapping into this larger idea that this is exactly what God intended for them to do. So we know that these systems kind of start coming together, mixing together. And one output is the business side. The other output is the religious side that either excuses or absolves people of those actions. Or explains away why it has to happen a certain way.
Yeah, and it's interesting about Manifest Destiny that it wasn't just about the extermination of the indigenous peoples in America. There was also tremendous deforestation happening.
I would argue that the chopping down of the people was a byproduct of wanting to get at the resources of the land. For that, I mean, and definitely no pun intended, but it's like you had to get rid of the land's protectors to exploit it.
They actually revered the land, and that's exactly right. They look at their land as something that we should be living in harmony with, and hundreds of years, what is it? What are we, thousands? No, hundreds of years.
Hundreds.
Into the future. We can say that they were right, and we were not.
Yes, that we should not have totally gone away from those traditional ways or just even the reverence. I think the reverence was looked at as rudimentary because it was not centered around these newer systems. It was something to be eradicated. It wasn't something to live in harmony with. Nobody was thinking, let me live in harmony with these indigenous people. They were like, how do we move you?
And that's a very consistent element of white supremacy as it encounters other races or other cultures. The tendency is to say, we don't understand that. We don't need that.
Exactly.
And so the extermination of those people also led to the extermination of their faith and their ideas regarding care of the land. And so here we are in a posture where we are entitled to this earth. So then we get into this period of after that fundamentalism where Christianity begins to take over after Manifest Destiny and things like that. We talked in the biblical literalism episode about how and why that fundamentalist idea emerged after the Enlightenment. And part of that was this young earth view where we're reading the Bible literally. So the earth must be 6,000 plus years old. And then in addition to that, they introduced this idea of dispensationalism, which is a fancy way of discussing how we are in the end times. So dispensationalism is this collection of ideas. Basically, there's a rapture. Everyone who believed is sent out of here or taken out of here. After that, there's a period of tribulation. This is where anyone who missed that first rapture has the chance to realize their mistake, repent, accept Jesus Christ, and hopefully by the time Jesus returns the second time, they'll be able to go with that group. And so once Jesus returns, that's the second coming. After that, there's a period of 1,000 years of peace where Jesus Christ reigns on the earth. And then there's the judgment. That's premillennialism. Postmillennialist believes that there's a 1,000-year reign of peace, then Christ comes, then all of the other stuff happens.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The difference between the two is, for those who are premillennialist, they believe that they're going to miss the tribulation. So during this period of time where the Antichrist is ruling and let loose in the earth to do whatever the Antichrist does, they believe that they're just going to be watching. So they believe they're going to miss it because they're going to be raptured out of here and they're just going to be watching it on pay-per-view and from the safety of their heaven. But that's what the view is. And then you see the whole Left Behind book series is a premillennialist dispensationalist view. So they believe they're going to go and then stuff is just going to go to hell.
Okay.
Now, the postmillennialist view, because that peace comes before we're like raptured out of here, we're kind of responsible for that reign of peace. So they don't know if it's happening now, if it's going to start at another point in the future or whatever. But a postmillennialist will think we have to set the conditions on earth so Christ can reign.
Okay.
So we're working with Christ to get, usher in this peace. All right. Both of those are two of many views. Anyway, this is the fundamentalist period where people kind of believe that it really doesn't matter. God is going to fix the earth no matter what we do to it.
So I feel like that's showing up in the discourse now about how much is too much to set about protecting the environment against other priorities or other desires. I don't know. It just seems so disingenuous to think that we should destroy the very system that we need to support us and pretty much all life on earth. Like, I don't understand it. I'm like, why do we want to drill this? Why do we want to do certain things? And now, in 2019, when we're smart enough, it's like, why do we still want to do certain things that we know will undermine the long game? But if you have these types, if you have this particular lens over the environment and that you are charged with being a steward over it, it's like the environment doesn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in our current system comes down to, can you protect yourself with a vote? Same way I feel about children. Children can't vote. They appeal to, you know, emotionally to parents and to people who are stakeholders in children's lives to make different decisions. But you don't ever have to worry about a 10-year-old,
mm-hmm.
you know, voting to let it be known what his or her desires are. I kind of feel like this is the same thing, especially if you think that somehow you get to make a mask and then you're going to be whisked away before you have to clean it up.
It's very much like a teenager of a very rich person who's getting their first vehicle.
Yeah.
So the parent gives them the car. They know they don't have to take care of this car. They're going to wreck this car. They're going to run it into the ground because they know there's a new car on the backside of this. And that's kind of how we viewed the planet that we're living on, that we don't have another option of a place to live.
Right.
So we view it like we can run it into the ground and our rich parent God is just going to provide us with another planet.
I also don't think people realize, don't have a frame of reference for how many individual people could come to that conclusion, like what I do doesn't matter. Because it's one thing if you're talking about a household of five and your own house, you know, kind of goes to trash because nobody thinks that what they do matters. So nobody's washing the dishes, nobody's taking out the trash, nobody's keeping on top of, let's say, making sure vermin are not in the house, nobody's vacuuming, keeping the dust down, like nobody cares. And all of y'all health is going to hell.
Yeah.
But it's not five, it's 7 billion. It's 7 billion strong. And somebody has to say, okay, no, what I do matters. You know, this is where we get we're starting to see examples of our carelessness and our callousness toward the environment. When you have marine biologists who are performing autopsies on whales and plastic is in their stomach, or the Great Pacific Trash Patch, you know, where people are like, this patch is bigger than some states, mm-hmm. and it's filled with debris, you know, runoff from our sewer systems, trash from shipping and other sources. And it's just kind of out there in the middle of the ocean. And I don't know, you know, that we realize this stuff shows up in our food. It shows up in our products. When we don't take care of something, I don't know who you're thinking is going to come behind you and fix it.
They think God is going to do it. And that's part of the issue with this theology. And that's why there's this other movement coming.
Okay.
Now, undergirding all of this, all of these historical moves, is a really old idea from a theologian named Thomas Aquinas.
Okay.
Now, Thomas Aquinas had this idea that God is unchangeable. And it is from Aquinas that we get this idea that God is omnipotent or God is omniscient. Because God needs to be perfect. And if God is perfect, then there's no room for movement where God is concerned. So God knows everything. God can do everything. And it's a view that's still held, that God has to be these things. If you talk to many Christians today, God has to be omnipotent. God, that comes from Aquinas. The issue is, if you have a God that is immovable, that is incapable of being moved, then are you also able to have a compassionate God that is moved
by God?
What happens in the world, what happens to the world and to those in the world. And so challenges to Aquinas's view basically say, okay, you can't have both. You can't have this perfect, unchangeable, immovable God and a God that is also attuned to the needs of the creation, because that God would be bound to also feel, to have some connection to this thing that was created. So that brings us to my favorite part of this talk, Alfred Whitehead. Alfred Whitehead was a British mathematician turned philosopher at some point in his career. So he had this idea that everything is related and everything is interconnected. And so through math, Whitehead was able to illustrate the connectedness of every piece of the universe. Like, I can say something to you and you feel it, or you'll see something and feel it, or something will happen on the earth and you'll feel it. And God is also a part of that relationship, whereas things happen in the earth. And this is in opposition to an Aquinas view that something happens in the earth and God feels it, or God is impacted by it and all these things. So if that's the case, then you lose the omnipotence maybe, or the omniscience, because you don't know everything's going to happen, but you gain a view that God is in relationship with the creation. Right. God has not extricated God's self from the creation. Out of Whitehead's ideas or his philosophy comes this view of process theology.
Okay.
All right. So process theology basically aligns with this and says we're all connected. All of this matters. God is growing as the universe grows, learning as the universe
goes. Is agile.
Yeah. God increases as the universe increases, as we increase in number. These are things that God doesn't know from the beginning, but God is there observing, and all of it is adding to God. If you think about it, like the example I used in an earlier show was that you could think that when it snows, that God is wherever God is in heaven at some snowflake workbench handcrafting each snowflake. And each one is unique because God is infinitely creative. And so that's how snow happens.
Right.
And that's how everything is unique. Or you could think that God put a system in place called crystallization, which says, all right, I don't know how this is going to go, but I'm going to make a system that's going to create infinitely unique number of snowflakes. They're never going to be the same, but it's just going to work on its own.
Right.
Depending on how you see those two views, which one makes more sense to you? Like, for me, the latter view makes more sense. Like, God would create a system and then watch the system go. That's how the process view works
for
me.
That's funny. That's how a science teacher explained it to us. I don't know. I don't think we ever used the word like theology at mm-hmm. my schools. But I remember she was asked, because we were learning about cells, and she was asked, well, if you believe in God, who created, you know, how do you believe in cell biology mm-hmm. if you believe in a God that created everything? And mm-hmm. she said, okay, I believe in a God that was smart enough to create a system that would replicate cells automatically.
Right.
And I was like, oh.
God, the creator or the inventor or designer would right. be that smart. And so that makes the most sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so it is out of this process theology view that eco-theology comes into play, because now we're saying that God is connected to this system. God has created this system so that we're all influenced by it. We're all related to it and we can't escape it. So we should be working together with it. It challenges all of the theology, well, not all of it, because everything wasn't this fundamentalist
literal
view, but it challenges those views by saying, okay, well, dominion doesn't make sense. That view of dominion doesn't make sense.
Right. Especially if you're going only exercising dominion for what I think are shorter term gratifications over longer term needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even, that does not follow anything that I think would be endorsed by a higher power. Like, yeah.
So God is constantly becoming. And so as we live and exist through the world, God mm-hmm. is there living. Because there's this tendency for people to think that God exists only out of time, meaning God can see past, present, and future mm-hmm. and make determinations. So this is John Calvin had this view of predeterminism, where he says God elected those who would be saved before the creation.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Arminius came along and said, God did that, but God knew based on the choices that humans would make, because God sits out of time and God saw those choices before the creation. And mm-hmm. process says, no, none of that.
Mm-hmm.
God is growing and learning as we grow, because that's the system that God created.
Right.
So instead of God being coercive and determining things, God is acts as this divine lure where God prompts and then
sees what you do,
sees what happens. And then adjustments are made based on that. Right. And do we believe that God is capable of something like that? That's more of a process. I mean, if God yeah. is worthy of being God, God would be able to handle variables.
Yeah.
Like, I think about the Avengers, Infinity War.
Uh-huh.
Listen, I'm spoiling it because you should have seen it.
Yeah,
Endgame's right. coming out this month. Where Doctor Strange was looking at the time through the time stone and seeing 14 million probabilities for what happened. And it was kind of a strange scene where his head was shaking and all that stuff, but he looked at 14 million probabilities. And this is kind of how they see God. Like, God knows all of the probabilities,
right.
but God doesn't know which
one
is going to go.
Choose. Yep.
And so,
so
this God is more like the Avengers Infinity Stone, Doctor Strange, which is kind of cool for me.
He's cool.
So anyway, eco-theologians are now looking at the world as kind of like chaos theory and math, like everything is related. And so now how do we act in a world where everything is connected?
Yeah.
What is our responsibility in a world where things that we do matter?
Yep.
And the heavenly parent is not going to come and reset this.
This is where I am. I also feel like this is where the discourse is, because even in my own experience, my own personal practices, as far as how do I take care of the environment that I find myself in now, small scale, it's like clean up after yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Large scale, it is, or not even large scale, but I think in depth, it's, are you making conscious decisions about what you're using and how you're using it and how that affects the next person? So not this idea of the five in your house, but ultimately the 100,000 in your zip code, or the 11 million in your state, or the 330 million in your country. That is a lot of individual preferences and things to consider. But ultimately, I just feel like the conversation, the tenor of the conversation right now is right at, is it worth it to destroy it when we don't know if we can regenerate it?
Yeah, we don't know. And also, I wonder, do we have the capability to destroy it? Because for the God that put a system in place, would that God not provide a safeguard that would wipe us all out before it?
Perhaps. I ain't trying to find out.
That's exactly right. You don't want to know. So
I don't want to know.
The better option is to figure out how we can undo the damage, because the damage that we've done is in the last few generations.
Yeah.
Exponentially more than has happened in the millennia before it.
Because we're now, so this is what we say, this corruption of these ideas into this larger supremacist system. I don't think that we've lost sight of whether or not it's right or wrong to take care of the environment. I think that we've lost control over whether or not we can enforce our political will against others who say, I have money to make. And that might seem very, very basic or very rudimentary to just come to that conclusion. But to me, the proof is in the pudding, down to what types of products are you producing? How are you producing them? Where do you house your factories? How do you treat your workers? How do you pay them? Where do they live? Like when you talk about interrelatedness, all of this is a system that's interconnected. So even some of my friends, they used to ask, well, it used to be a conversation, oh, what kind of car would you get? And at one point in time, I was like, I would get a Prius because apparently, you know, they help with gas conservation, and my limited understanding at the time, even the car that I have now, I have because I feel like you get a lot out of it. I still understand that there are levels to this, that if I could participate, you know, in a public transportation only, or even a non-motorized transportation only, like those are the super gurus of making sure that the footprint is small. But a lot of people are not thinking consciously about their day-to-day choices that they make that affect others. And then coming back to how do you participate within the systems and the societies that you find yourself in? If you have asthma, mm-hmm. right, I don't know that you should be investing politically on a large scale with someone who believes that your air should not be as clean as possible for as long as possible for the short-term gain of an expanded tax base. Mm-hmm. You can't breathe. It won't matter to you anyway.
Right. We're going to talk about this in a lot more detail in the next show. But eco-theology is relatively new, but a theology of connectedness with the environment is mm-hmm. not new at all.
Mm-hmm.
As we mentioned before, native religions or spiritual practices mm-hmm. had emphasized heavily our interconnectedness.
Non-Western
religions. So you have Eastern religions, you have mm-hmm. African religions, mm-hmm. you have all of these religions that actually look at our connection with the creation and say, hey, we're in this thing together.
And that we're actually the protectors of the creation, but then the creation was reduced down to natural resources with the potential to be turned into products for retail. Products for retail, resale for shipping. And granted, we have, as far as the history of the world, we are experiencing a technical age that has allowed us to live in relative comfort that previous generations have never known.
Mm-hmm.
The price is high, though. Like, the price is high. And I don't know if people are tapped in, but if you're tapped into this show, here's the part where I tell you, you know, things are getting warmer. I don't know why you may or may not believe that is happening, but it is a game changer if the environment at our poles changes, if the environment in which our seas are functioning change, our food chain changes. Okay, those of you who like a fresh fried fish sandwich on Fridays, you might not have access to your preferred fish. You might not have access to your preferred cuisine because of the choices that we make in other aspects of our life. Like, let's bring this down. I was joking earlier, you know, I feel like Black folk have done their job. We do not throw away grocery bags. You know what I mean? We reuse plastics. We find multiple uses for resources. A lot of that is based in the fact that our community is under-resourced.
Right.
And even something like that, you know, you can find multiple uses and you will do that. You will share, you will have more community. You know, if I have it, you have it. But large scale, we cannot excuse ourselves from participating in making the greater good even better when it comes to our environment and our children, just because we feel entitled to something for this short term.
Yeah, there's lessons there. Like you mentioned, so you go to the grocery store, you get a plastic bag.
Yeah.
You don't throw that plastic bag away. That plastic bag first could become a shower cap. Then
it is a lunch bag.
It's a lunch bag.
It is the small trash can trash bag.
Well, so that's the last stop. It's the trash can It's always the last stop. It's so many things before that.
When we are bagging up meals,
yep.
We first thing we looking for, y'all got to shop.
You got to shop. Yeah, everything. I mean, like I said, it's all of those things, and then it becomes a trash can liner or its own trash can. And it before that's the last stop, and it goes to landfill. Right. We're squeezing uses out of that thing. And that's kind of...
It's tongue in cheek, but it's real though. Yeah. Like everybody knows about the trash bag stash, like the plastic bag stash. Now we can buy reusable bags. You know what I mean? And if that's, and we're talking about small scale, because I would much rather see our corporate players pay what they owe. Meaning you need to be participating at the true level of your effectiveness, right? So one thing that private entities like to do is that they set up a 501c3 sister organization. It's their foundation. And through that foundation, they're usually making grants to organizations that are trying to right their corporate wrongs.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
Right.
That's just a system. But that will not undo years and generations of some of the things that we've doubled down on for money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For money or for convenience. I think a great example of just this idea of eco-theology is what we saw with the Sioux tribes around this, the Keystone Pipeline and how their mission was not even to highlight their own issue with the pipeline. Their mission was to highlight how seriously they take the mandate of protecting the earth.
Yeah.
And for those who remember that or who have been keeping up with the story, because it continues to evolve, it was a demonstration. We don't always get a strong example of how indigenous cultures have ever operated in this land. This was them bringing their culture out for all to see that it was important enough for them to protect the earth from unnecessary scarring. And like, it sounds so poetic, but this is, that was really the heart of their movement. Watching how people reacted to that,
right?
Kind of tells you where the moral compass was on the issue.
Yeah, they're believing that they're entitled to run a oil pipeline through their water resource.
Water,
and so that even despite treaties, despite everything that we've done to the land, we've taken everything from you, and we have the authority to
poison your water.
Right. So that sense of entitlement is
pervasive.
Yeah. So we encourage everyone to look and see what things you can do, especially this month, to contribute to this interconnectedness that we share with our planet. I often think about, like, if our trash pickup stopped, we would be in a mess. Like, if you think about
in 2 weeks,
right, a zombie apocalypse, the problem would be trash, because we accumulate so much trash within a week.
A great show to watch is Life After People. Life After People, or I think that's the only one, but it like shows like what happens if all the humans disappear and the systems that we operate are no longer functioning.
I want to watch that like right now. I love that. I love natural disaster stuff, especially stuff that gets rid of us.
Well, humans are nihilistic by nature, but okay.
So anyway, that's what we wanted to talk about. We did want to get into Revelation and how the eco-theology idea of that when God creates a new heaven and new earth, if you read that literally, that new earth is on earth. Like, it's not off in heaven. And so eco-theologians look at that new earth as something that we create the environment for. And so they want to get to work doing that. So anyway, that's our episode on eco-theology.
Thanks.
We hope you got something out of that. And look for ways to use your resources better.
Just
find three more
better uses
for that plastic trash bag. For Faith Uncut, I'm Yo's Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.